Chapter 50. A piece of work, Britannia, sitting meditating one fine day, perhaps in the attitude in which she is presented on the copper coinage, discovers all of a sudden that she wants Veneering in Parliament. It occurs to her that Veneering is a representative man which cannot in these times be doubted, and that Her Majesty's faithful commons are incomplete without him. So, Britannia mentions to a legal gentleman of her acquaintance that, if Veneering will put down £5,000, he may write a couple of initial letters after his name at the extremely cheap rate of £2,500 per letter. It is clearly understood between Britannia and the legal gentleman that nobody is to take up the £5,000, but that being put down they will disappear by magical conjuration and enchantment. The legal gentleman in Britannia's confidence going straight from that lady to Veneering, thus commissioned, Veneering declares himself highly flattered, but requires breathing time to ascertain whether his friends will rally round him. Apostrophe above all things, he says, it behoves him to be clear, at a crisis of this importance, whether his friends will rally round him. Apostrophe the legal gentleman, in the interests of his client, cannot allow much time for this purpose, as the lady rather thinks she knows somebody prepared to put down £6,000, but he says he will give Veneering 4 hours. Veneering then says to Mrs. Veneering, we must work, apostrophe, and throws himself into a hansom cab. Mrs. Veneering in the same moment relinquishes baby to nurse, presses her aquiline hands upon her brow, to arrange the throbbing intellect within, orders out the carriage, and repeats in a distracted and devoted manner, compounded of Ophelia and any self-immolating female of antiquity you may prefer, we must work. Apostrophe, Veneering having instructed his driver, to charge at the public in the streets, like the lifeguards at Waterloo, is driven furiously to Duke Street, St. James. There, he finds Twemlow in his lodgings, fresh from the hands of a secret artist who has been doing something to his hair with yolks of eggs. The process requiring that Twemlow shall, for 2 hours after the application, allow his hair to stick upright and dry gradually, he is in an appropriate state for the receipt of startling intelligence. Looking equally like the monument on Fish Street Hill, and King Priam on a certain incendiary occasion not wholly unknown as a neat point from the classics. My dear Twemlow, apostrophe says Veneering, grasping both his bands, as the dearest and oldest of my friends apostrophe, then there can be no more doubt about it in future, apostrophe thinks Twemlow, and I am. Apostrophe, are you of opinion that your cousin, Lord Snigsworth, would give his name as a member of my committee? I don't go so far as to ask for his lordship. I only ask for his name. Do you think he would give me his name? Apostrophe, in sudden low spirits, Twemlow replies, I don't think he would. Apostrophe, my political opinions, apostrophe says Veneering, not previously aware of having any, are identical with those of Lord Snigsworth, and perhaps as a matter of public feeling and public principle, Lord Snigsworth would give me his name. Apostrophe, it might be so, apostrophe says Twemlow, but apostrophe and perplexedly scratching his head, forgetful of the yolks of eggs, is the more discomfited by being reminded how sticky he is. Between such old and intimate friends as ourselves, apostrophe pursues Veneering, there should in such a case be no reserve. Promise me that, if I ask you to do anything for me which you don't like to do, or feel the slightest difficulty in doing, you will freely tell me so. Apostrophe, this, Twemlow is so kind as to promise, with every appearance of most heartily intending to keep his word. Would you have any objection to write down to Snigsworthy Park, and ask this favor of Lord Snigsworth? Of course if it were granted I should know that I owed it solely to you, while at the same time you would put it to Lord Snigsworth entirely upon public grounds. Would you have any objection? Apostrophe, says Twemlow, with his hand to his forehead, you have exacted a promise from me. apostrophe, I have, my dear Twemlow. Apostrophe, and you expect me to keep it honorably. Apostrophe, I do, my dear Twemlow. Apostrophe, on the whole, then, observe me, apostrophe urges Twemlow with great nicety, as if, in the case of its having been off the whole, he would have done it directly on the whole. I must beg you to excuse me from addressing any communication to Lord Snigsworth. Apostrophe, bless you, bless you. Apostrophe, apostrophe, says Veneering, horribly disappointed, but grasping him by both hands again, in a particularly fervent manner. It is not to be wondered at that poor Twemlow should decline to inflict a letter on his noble cousin, who has got in the temper, inasmuch as his noble cousin, who allows him a small annuity on which he lives, takes it out of him, as the phrase goes, in extreme severity, putting him, when he visits at Snigsworthy Park, under a kind of martial law, ordaining that he shall hang his hat on a particular peg, sit on a particular chair, talk on particular subjects to particular people, and perform particular exercises, such as sounding the praises of the family varnish, not to say pictures, and abstaining from the choicest of the family wines, unless expressly invited to partake. One thing, however, I can do for you, apostrophe, says Twemlow, and that is, work for you. Apostrophe, Veneering blesses him again. I'll go, apostrophe, says Twemlow, in a rising hurry of spirits, to the club. Let us see now, what o'clock is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, 11:20. Apostrophe, I'll be, apostrophe, says Twemlow, at the club by 11:50, and I'll never leave it all day. Apostrophe, Veneering feels that his friends are rallying round him, and says, thank you, thank you. I knew I could rely upon you. I said to Anastasia, before leaving home just now, to come to you, of course, the first friend I have seen on a subject so momentous to me, my dear Twemlow, I said to Anastasia, we must work. Apostrophe, you were right, apostrophe, replies Twemlow. Tell me, is she working? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she is, apostrophe, says Veneering. Good. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cries Twemlow, polite little gentleman that he is. A woman's tact is invaluable. To have the dear sex with us, is to have everything with us. Apostrophe, but you have not imparted to me, apostrophe, remarks Veneering, what do you think of my entering the House of Commons? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I think, apostrophe, rejoins Twemlow, feelingly, that it is the best club in London. Apostrophe, Veneering again blesses him, plunges downstairs, rushes into his hansom, and directs the driver to be up and at the British Public, and to charge into the city. Meanwhile Twemlow, in an increasing hurry of spirits, gets his hair down as well as he can, which is not very well, for, after these glutinous applications it is restive, and has a surface on it somewhat in the nature of pastry, and gets to the club by the appointed time. At the club he promptly secures a large window, writing materials, and all the newspapers, and establishes himself, immovable, to be respectfully contemplated by Pall Mall. Sometimes, when a man enters who nods to him, Twemlow says, do you know Veneering? Apostrophe, apostrophe, man says, no, member of the club? Apostrophe, Twemlow says, yes. Coming in for pocket breaches. Apostrophe, man says, ah, hope he may find it worth the money. Apostrophe, yawns, and saunters out. Towards 6 o'clock of the afternoon, Twemlow begins to persuade himself that he is positively jaded with work, and thinks it much to be regretted that he was not brought up as a parliamentary agent. From Twemlow's, Veneering dashes at Podsnap's place of business. Finds Podsnap reading the paper, standing, and inclined to be oratorical over the astonishing discovery he has made, that Italy is not England. Respectfully entreats Podsnap's pardon for stopping the flow of his words of wisdom, and informs him what is in the wind. Tells Podsnap that their political opinions are identical. gives Podsnap to understand that he, Veneering, formed his political opinions while sitting at the feet of him, Podsnap. Seeks earnestly to know whether Podsnap will rally around him. Apostrophe apostrophe, says Podsnap, something sternly. Now, first of all, Veneering, do you ask my advice? Apostrophe apostrophe, Veneering falters, that as so old, and so dear a friend, yes, yes, that's all very well, apostrophe says Podsnap, but have you made up your mind to take this borough of pocket breaches on its own terms, or do you ask my opinion whether you shall take it, or leave it alone? Apostrophe apostrophe, Veneering repeats, that his heart's desire and his soul's thirst are, that Podsnap shall rally around him. Now, I'll be plain with you, Veneering, apostrophe says Podsnap, knitting his brows. You will infer that I don't care about Parliament, from the fact of my not being there? Apostrophe apostrophe, why, of course Veneering knows that. Of course Veneering knows that, if Podsnap chose to go there, he would be there, in a space of time, that might be stated by the light and thoughtless as a jiffy. It is not worth my while, apostrophe pursues Podsnap, becoming handsomely mollified, and it is the reverse of important to my position. But it is not my wish, to set myself up as law for another man, differently situated. You think it is worth your while, and is important to your position. Is that so? Apostrophe, always with the proviso, that Podsnap will rally around him, Veneering thinks it is so. Then you don't ask my advice, apostrophe says Podsnap. Good. Then I won't give it you. But you do ask my help. Good. Then I'll work for you. Apostrophe, Veneering instantly blesses him, and apprises him that Twemlow is already working. Podsnap does not quite approve that anybody should be already working, regarding it rather in the light of a liberty, but tolerates Twemlow, and says he is a well-connected old female who will do no harm. I have nothing very particular to do today, apostrophe adds Podsnap, and I'll mix with some influential people. I had engaged myself to dinner, but I'll send Mrs. Podsnap, and get off going myself, and I'll dine with you at 8. It's important we should report progress and compare notes. Now, let me see. You ought to have a couple of active energetic fellows, of gentlemanly manners, to go about. Apostrophe, Veneering, after cogitation, thinks of Boots and Brewer, whom I have met at your house, apostrophe says Podsnap. Yes. They'll do very well. Let them each have a cab, and go about. Apostrophe, Veneering immediately mentions, what a blessing he feels it, to possess a friend capable of such grand administrative suggestions, and really is elated at this going about of Boots and Brewer, as an idea wearing an electioneering aspect and looking desperately like business. Leaving Podsnap, at a hand gallop, he descends upon Boots and Brewer, who enthusiastically rally round him by at once bolting off in cabs, taking opposite directions. Then Veneering repairs to the legal gentleman in Britannia's confidence, and with him transacts some delicate affairs of business, and issues an address to the independent electors of Pocket Breaches, announcing that he is coming among them for their suffrages, as the mariner returns to the home of his early childhood. A phrase which is none the worse for his never having been near the place in his life, and not even now distinctly knowing where it is. Mrs. Veneering, during the same eventful hours, is not idle. No sooner does the carriage turn out, all complete, than she turns into it, all complete, and gives the word to Lady Tippins. Apostrophe that charmer dwells over a staymaker's in the Belgravian borders, with a life-size model in the window on the ground floor of a distinguished beauty in a blue petticoat, stay lace in hand, looking over her shoulder at the town in innocent surprise. As well she may, to find herself dressing under the circumstances. Lady Tippins at home? Lady Tippins at home, with the room darkened, and her back like the lady's at the ground floor window, though for a different reason, cunningly turned towards the light. Lady Tippins is so surprised, By seeing her dear Mrs. Veneering, so early in the middle of the night, the pretty creature calls it that her eyelids almost go up, under the influence of that emotion. To whom Mrs. Veneering incoherently communicates, how that Veneering has been offered pocket breaches, how that it is the time for rallying round, how that Veneering has said we must work, how that she is here, as a wife and mother, to entreat Lady Tippins to work, how that the carriage is at Lady Tippins' disposal for purposes of work, how that she, proprietress of said brand new elegant equipage, will return home on foot on bleeding feet, if need be, to work, not specifying how, until she drops by the side of baby's crib. My love, apostrophe says Lady Tippins, compose yourself. We'll bring him inches apostrophe and Lady Tippins really does work, and work the Veneering horses too. For she clatters about town all day, calling upon everybody she knows, and showing her entertaining powers and green fan to immense advantage, by rattling on with, my dear soul, what do you think? What do you suppose me to be? You'll never guess. I'm pretending to be an electioneering agent. And for what place of all places? Pocket breeches. And why? Because the dearest friend I have in the world has bought it. And who is the dearest friend I have in the world? A man of the name of Veneering. Not omitting his wife, who is the other dearest friend I have in the world. And I positively declare I forgot their baby, who is the other. And we are carrying on this little farce to keep up appearances, and isn't it refreshing? Then, my precious child, the fun of it is that nobody knows who these Veneerings are, and that they know nobody, and that they have a house out of the Tales of Virginia, and give dinners out of the Arabian Nights. Curious to see 'em, my dear? Say you'll know 'em. Come and dine with 'em. They shan't bore you. Say who shall meet you. We'll make up a party of our own, and I'll engage that they shall not interfere with you for one single moment. You really ought to see their gold and silver camels. I call their dinner table the caravan. Do come and dine with my Veneerings, my own Veneerings, my exclusive property, the dearest friends I have in the world. And above all, my dear, be sure you promise me your vote and interest, and all sorts of plumpers for pocket breeches. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.